This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
326 Rock Chalk Sports Talk, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. With Derek Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert. We're happy to have you with us on a lovely Tuesday afternoon. We'll talk to CJ Moore coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour and a very special edition of Let's Rank Stuff at 5 o'clock. But right now we bring on our good friend back from vacation, perhaps better than ever, Matt Tate, back on the program. Matt, how are you, man?
Good evening. I'm great, man. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm good. How was the vacay?
Oh, it was outstanding. It was my grandparents live down in North Carolina, and they do a little beach house slash family reunion every summer, and just let us go wild. There's beach, sand, pool, sun, food. It's beautiful.
Wait,
good time.
Matt Tate going wild. What's that look like?
It's not pretty. It's not pretty. No, it looks mostly like a guy laying on his butt, enjoying a beverage and soaking up the sun and, you know, playing a few beach games, can jam, football, frisbee, those types of things. It was great, man. It was, it's hard to get away most of the year, but it was nice to get away. And as you know, and as you probably live as well, you're never really away. So I was keeping an eye on things from a distance, and that's what I love about June. I mean, because of the draft and because of KU's prominence in the draft, it really isn't an off month for Kansas and those of us who cover the program. There's so much going on still. You know, May's a little different and July's a little different, but June's awesome. I mean, and we're right there, you know, a couple of days away from the big night and all that speculation about who's going to go where. And you know, mostly, I mean, Jackson's going to be fine, and it's worth talking about and worth following, but, you know, that's a pretty foregone conclusion that he's going to be in a good spot. The Mason thing is the exciting part to me. I can't wait to see where he goes, when he goes, what the fit looks like for him, and just, you know, what he does from there with his new team.
Well, I think that your claim on Jackson being fine wherever he goes does include a bit of a disclaimer with an asterisk, except for Sacramento, right? Because we've already seen,
Amen. We've already seen
a couple Jayhawks, T. Rob and McLemore, go to Sacramento. Didn't end well for those guys, as it does for most dudes who get drafted to Sacramento. So I'm with you. I'm happy wherever he goes, except for the Kings.
Yeah, no, I covered the draft 5 years in a row, and that was wild to have McLemore and Thomas Robinson in back-to-back years go to Sacramento, because it was sort of a deja vu thing. You know, they were, what were they, fifth and seventh, something like that.
Yeah.
And so it was almost in the same spot. And you know, it just kind of felt like it felt like one of those weird things, like, oh, we've done this before, you know? So, I just thought it was a wild thing, but nobody wants to be there ever. You know, nobody's feeling that.
Well, I think it's weird that Jackson has widely been considered a consensus top three pick, yet he seems to be the only guy amongst that trio, or four if you want to include Jason Tatum, to where his outlook on draft night could go in any which direction. I don't know if that speaks more to just the absurdity of the NBA draft or if it is particular to Jackson and his skill set or circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's funny about Jackson to me is that for how many months now we've heard that he's probably a top three pick, and that's, you know, that's just been the standard phrase that's been mentioned anytime you've talked NBA and talked draft with him or about him. But here we are the week of, and you're, you know, I think Draft Express had him fall to four, like you just said, because Tatum moved into that third spot. So it's weird to me. I don't know. I mean, when Boston moved out of the one spot, I thought that ended any chance that he had at going number one. Everything that I saw, and you know, I'm not. I've been on vacation, so I haven't been trying to track down GMs and agents and all these types of people too hard lately. Anyway, but I've been reading and following, and you know, these guys in the NBA cities whose job it is to cover those things are sharing a lot of good information, and it really seemed like Danny Ainge loves Josh Jackson, you know, and so could he have gone one if the Celtics stayed there? He could have, you know, but I thought them moving back to three was a no-brainer move, a perfect decision for them to say, okay, well, now we can take the guy we really did want to take at one without the pressure, without the risk, without people saying, why'd you do that? You know, because now it just looks like an easy thing to do if he's there at three. So I thought that was the case. But then, you know, I have a ton of respect for Draft Express and the guys who do that site. I know a couple of them, and, you know, they work 365 days a year on this thing. So the fact that they today or yesterday or whenever it changed are sliding Tatum into that third spot to Boston makes me think there's at least something to that. So does he fall to four and go to Phoenix? Maybe so, you know, and I know for a fact that the Suns would love that. I mean, that's you know, they're sitting there in a dream position hoping that one of those teams passes on him. But, you know, I still don't think you can count out L.A. for Jackson either. I mean, Magic Johnson's a big Josh Jackson fan, and Magic Johnson and Jackson as players anyway share some traits. You know, the height, the killer instinct, the attitude, the motor. There's a lot to like there that reminds one of the other probably. So I don't think he's going one to Philly. I don't think anybody thinks that. But 2, 3, 4, I think he's in play for any of those spots. And as much as that means he's okay, like we talked about at the jump here, I mean, it still has a little intrigue and excitement around it because that's a big difference in each city. It's a different fit. It's a different scenario. It's a different, I guess, responsibility. And I think he'd be great in any of those spots, even Phoenix. I know a lot of KU fans don't want him to go to Phoenix, but I don't see why not. I mean, you know, they're young. They've got a couple of really good guards that he could play with and really benefit from, much like he did with Graham and Mason here at Kansas. So I think that's not a horrible spot. Of course, you'd rather go to L.A. or Boston. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, Phoenix isn't Sacramento. We'll say it that way.
We're talking to Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. It's new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Obviously, you covered Josh Jackson very extensively in his 1 year at Kansas and everything that went on. If you're an NBA GM and you're looking at potentially taking him, how much are you taking into consideration the off-the-court stuff that happened with him?
I don't think much. You know, it's funny. We had a couple of teams call the newsroom and ask for information, and this happens a lot. I mean, we you know, especially with lottery-type guys, we get some NBA types, you know, it's not the general manager ever, but you know, they've got people and they've got guys working for them. And so those guys make those phone calls, you know, regularly, I think. I mean, it's something out of like 8 of 11 years now, if this happens with Jackson, that itself will have had a guy in the lottery. So, you know, they're calling and they're checking, and you have to. It's like recruiting, right? I mean, you don't just go pick a guy. You want to talk to his parents. You want to talk to his high school coaches. You want to talk to the guys on his team in high school, or the janitor is the cliche way to go that route, you know. But you have to do it because you want to know what you're getting. You want to know what you're signing up for, and at this level, you want to know what you're investing in. I mean, we're talking millions of dollars, so. It never surprises me that they go to that level and do that due diligence to find out anything and everything they can. And, you know, sometimes they call and it's just a character check thing. Like, hey, what'd you think of the guy? You know, and sometimes they just appreciate a beat writer's opinion or an editor's opinion of a guy. You know, they know, like you just said, we were around these guys a lot more than they have been. And so, does it mean they base their entire draft board on what the reporters around the country that they call say? No, of course not. But it's something they note, and it's something they put in a file and do take into at least consideration a little bit. So we did get a couple of those calls, so I do know people are interested, and it is on the minds of some of these guys, especially in those top five slots where he's likely to go. But you know, I think they also talk to Bill Self, and they also talk to anyone at KU that they need to or want to. And those guys then, you know, they've been very guarded in what they've been able to say and wanted to say in the media with regard to all that off-the-court stuff. And you know, some of it, like the hit-and-run thing was, you know, he backed into a car in a parking lot, he didn't leave a note. You know, I don't think that registers at all with NBA people. I mean, that's just so irrelevant to them. But, you know, the other stuff, they have to check into it. It's their responsibility to do so. But again, I think talking to Self, talking to KU, where they can have that free and open dialogue and maybe get a little bit more of a feel for how much concern there is there or isn't, I think that helps them. And I think in this case, the concern is very little, and the talent and the type of player that you're getting is such a huge, huge, huge ceiling and so much potential that, you know, when you weigh that out, it becomes pretty clear quickly that, you know, this guy's talent is going to transcend any other concerns or things you might be worried about or looking at with him. So I don't think they ignore it, but I don't think they make much out of it because, you know, of all the things he can do and all the ways he can fit and just the talent that he has.
So what I'm essentially hearing is that you are kind of pulling strings behind the scenes on what's going to happen on Thursday and have been for quite some time.
For years, right. I'm glad you picked that up because I don't like coming out and saying
sure.
that. You know, in fact, I covered the draft 5 years in a row and I took the last couple off because I felt like a couple of people just like yourself here now were kind of sniffing around and on the scent there that I was, you know, really the guy behind
right,
the draft,
right.
all 60 picks. And so I decided, let's just lay low, stay in Lawrence, not go out to New York. You know, there's so many things that happen when you get out there. There's party invitations. Jay-Z's asking you to hang out.
Sure.
I mean,
nothing new for you.
No, but I don't get that here as much. You know, it's mm-hmm. nice. It's nice to just kind of lay low and enjoy the summer. So I'm glad you picked up on that because I don't like to talk about it. But,
right.
But I apparently do because, you know, I'm an idiot. So, oh, well.
He's Matt Tate. I'm Nick Schwartz. Rock Chalk Sports Talk, new FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. How much of an adjustment do you think or a learning curve there will be for Frank Mason? I think we're probably both on the same page. Correct me if I'm wrong, that he's going to get drafted. But once you get drafted, all of a sudden it's about sticking and finding your footing in the league. What do you think that adjustment period is going to be like for Mason?
You know, he's so mature, and he's so, I don't know, he just, you know, even early in his Kansas career, he carried himself like a veteran. And so I expect him to do the same at that level. I mean, he's humble. He knows his role, and he's always going to play to it. He's going to defer to veterans and leaders and really learn from those guys, much the way he did here at Kansas. And so, you know, I think it'll be an easy transition for him. You know, the game might be a little different thing. I mean, actually playing basketball, there's going to be a lot more size out there than he's used to probably on both ends, when he's defending and when he's trying to get to the rim. So there may be a bigger adjustment there, but just in terms of fitting in or the culture or just, you know, being an NBA guy, I really don't think he'll have any problem. He's so focused. He's so driven. He's so mature. He's ready for this in every way. And I think that's why you've seen him shoot up draft boards. You know, now Coach Self said last week that, you know, there's an outside chance that he could sneak into the first round at the end, and he's hoping that happens. I don't think it will. I talked to him recently, and he's saying, you know, it'll be tough. But he does believe he'll go top 40, which is, you know, that first 10 picks in the second round. And that's pretty good. I mean, for a guy who midway through the season, even if not late in the season, wasn't even in the mock drafts and in the top 60 in most people's minds. So I think that's a big reason for it. Obviously, he was the National Player of the Year. Obviously, he had a heck of a season. But he spent the last couple of months interviewing and auditioning and you know, showing what he can do and getting better still. And I think when you meet him, if you're a GM or a head coach or whatever it is, you immediately like him. And that character comes ringing through and you realize, yeah, this is a guy we would love to have if we can find a way to get him. So I think he's ready for that no matter what team he goes to. Because of the way he's approached his whole career, really even starting in high school and starting with that, you know, that prep school situation and all of that stuff. I mean, he's ready for this because he's just decided that, you know, this is what matters to him. And you know, he's got the obvious factor of his son and providing for him and all that stuff contributing to that too. So this isn't a guy who's excited to go get his payday and just clown around on all these NBA trips that he gets to go on and have you know, very little pressure sitting at the end of a bench somewhere or something like that. He's determined and focused and wants to not only go play and make a name for himself, but also do it for a long time. And so you don't get to do that by just being a clown. And I don't think there's any concern at all that he would take that approach. I think he's ready for whatever's thrown at him. And, you know, I look at those Draft Express and those types of mock drafts, and it's amazing to me. I mean, right now he's projected 8 picks ahead of Monte Morris from Iowa State. You know, he's right in that mix with Josh Hart from Villanova. You know, those are guys that heading into last year were far and away above Mason in terms of projecting them at the next level. And now he's right in there, if not ahead. So I think Monte Morris is going to be a fantastic NBA player. I think he's going to be a great, you know, bench guy that can come in and really do some things and run a second unit, much like Mason probably will be doing. And it's wild to me to think that Mason's now regarded, at least in some circles, as a better prospect than Monte Morris. But it makes sense because, again, you put that skill and that ability and that drive with the character that you see when you talk to him or interview him or meet him. And it just adds up to a really nice piece and something that, again, I think any team would love to have him on their team. That doesn't mean they're all clamoring to pick him or making moves to get him. But if you told any one of those 30 teams at the end or before the draft started that, hey, by the end of tonight, you're going to have Frank Mason on your team somehow, you know, as long as you're not telling them they're going to have to pick him 3rd overall or anything like that, I think any one of those guys would be like, yeah, we'll take him. That'll work. We'll find a spot for him, and then the rest is up to him.
For me, it's really easy to envision Frank Mason having a Nick Collison-like career. Like, maybe he starts here and there, but to just be like that first point guard off the bench, kind of commanding the second unit and doing that for 10 to 12 years, like, it's really easy for me to see that happening with Frank.
I love it. I love the comparison. I mean, obviously, they're different positions, but I love it. I think that's exactly right. I mean, Nick Collison's been a mainstay and a big part of OKC, even without putting up ridiculous stats. I mean, he's a huge part and has been a huge part of that team. And you need guys like that. I mean, it's all about athletes and it's all about getting buckets and it's all about, you know, putting points on the board and fans in the seats and all that stuff. But, you know, the teams that really want to win and really want to go after that title, they need guys like Collison and Mason and others. There are others, plenty of others. But you've got to have guys like that. So I love that comparison. I think that's fantastic. And, you know, the Spurs are, you know, one of those teams that everybody thinks, oh, man, Mason would be great there. Well, he would, but he'd be great anywhere. But let's look at this. And I did this the other day. I was talking with someone and, you know, I don't know what Tony Parker's future holds, but it's possible he could retire. I mean, he's injured and he's old and, you know, he's had a heck of a run. What more does he have to prove? So let's say he retires and let's say the Spurs go find a way to get Chris Paul in San Antonio. Well, then maybe they let Patty Mills go and they draft Frank Mason as the backup to Chris Paul. And all of a sudden you got Chris Paul and Frank Mason instead of Tony Parker and Patty Mills. I'm not so sure you're any worse off, and you're probably better off. So, again, that's just one example, and I think that just shows you how you could probably take every team and do that and say, well, if they get him, then this guy probably leaves. But, man, does that really hurt him? Doesn't he add a lot? Doesn't he do what he does? Probably so, you know, and I think you could go up and down the board and do that with Mason. You know, the coolest thing is the draft is such a gamble. I don't care if you're picking 2nd or 52nd. It's a gamble. You're taking risks. You don't know what you're getting until you get him in your camp. And in order to minimize that, in order to you know, play it as safely as you can, those guys like Frank Mason look really attractive really quickly because you do know what you're going to get with Frank Mason. You're not getting an all-star. You're not getting maybe even an 82-a-year starter or anything like that. But you're going to get a guy who's going to give you great effort, great attitude, great teammate, work hard, push others, take whatever his role is, team first. I mean, you know all those things you're getting. He's low profile. He's not going to cause any trouble. He's not out off the court running up problems and drama. I mean, he's just a really nice addition to any team. And so you're talking about minimizing risks. That's about as easily as you can do it by looking at that guy and going, yeah, we'll take him. Let's give him number zero and let's roll.
He's Matt Tate, Lawrence Journal World, KUSports.com. Thank you as always, man.
My friend, yeah, enjoy the draft. My pleasure.
Will do. All righty, that's Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World. I'm Nick Schwert, Rock Chalk Sports Talk. On the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, it is a quarter till 4. We'll talk to CJ Moore at 4 o'clock. We've got your Tuesday news break coming up at 4:30, and I'm excited for this edition of Let's Rank Stuff today at 5 o'clock. It could be the most controversial list that I have ever brought to the table, and we'll be doing that at 5 o'clock.
I think we need to do a Let's Rank Stuff of our Let's Rank Stuff editions.
Five worst, five best?
Mm-hmm.
That would be controversial. Yes. That would really get the people, you know, stirred up into a frenzy, but that's what the segment's all about. He's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Coming up on the other side, we'll continue talking a little NBA draft. Where's Josh Jackson going to go? Why is he the only one who is caught up in this frenzy of what's going on in the NBA offseason? We'll do that on the other side.